When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is The Art of Charm. Learn everything you need to know to crush it in business, love, and life. The Art of Charm is where ordinary guys become extraordinary men.
Welcome to The Art of Charm. I'm Jordan Harbinger. The Art of Charm brings together the best thought leaders, teachers, and exceptional individuals to teach you how to be a top performer in life, love, and at work. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors teaching you their expertise and packing decades of research, testing, and tough lessons into a curriculum. We may not have all the answers, but we do have all the questions. Make sure to stay up to date with The Art of Charm and get some great stuff that we don't or can't share on the show by signing up for the newsletter at theartofcharm.com. That's where we'll email you our fundamentals toolkit that covers topics like body language and nonverbal communication, dating, attraction, persuasion, networking, public speaking, negotiation, and a whole lot more. I also want to encourage you to join us in the first social capital challenge at theartofcharm.com/challenge. This challenge is about improving your social capital, inspiring more people to develop a personal and professional relationship with you. During the first 4 weeks, we're going to be giving away something special as well, so keep your eyes open for details. You won't want to miss on what we're giving away either. The challenge will get progressively more difficult, so if you think networking is already easy, great. This will make you a better networker, and it will make you a better connector of people. Oh, and last thing, if you want to have accountability, please invite your friends to theartofcharm.com/challenge as well, and they can join the challenge too. Today, we're talking with my friend Jason Connell on the show. We're going to talk about being a high performer and how it won't solve all your problems, how sleep and taking care of yourself come into play and how to do that a little bit better, mastering your inner voice, stop neglecting yourself, and a process he calls interviewing yourself, which I think is really interesting and probably super, super useful. I'm going to check that out for myself. And we do a magic trick live on the show, which is kind of interesting and kind of random. Stay tuned for this awesome show with Jason Connell. Tell us what you do in one sentence.
One sentence. I teach self-love and self-compassion to exceptionally high-performing young adults.
So this is kind of an interesting conundrum, right? Because don't high-performing people have self-love and self-compassion already? That's the gut reaction I'm getting, right?
So some do, some don't. It's like give or take. It's about 50-50. A lot of people have felt love their entire life and fell into their passion at a young age, and they went on to build like million-dollar business, nonprofit, they're a professional athlete, professional performer, whatever. They're all set. The flip side, the other like 50% or so, what's happened to them is they have become addicted to external gratification, or they believed that when they made $1 million, when they went pro, when they whatever, got straight A's, that suddenly they would love themselves. And in the way that alcohol tends to magnify however you already feel, success does the exact same thing. So if you don't love yourself, if you don't treat yourself well, if you don't prioritize yourself, and then you become successful, it's just going to get worse, not better.
Wow. Interesting. So you can actually ignore the problem into becoming larger, like most problems, actually. But the idea of becoming a high performer is not actually going to solve the problem, which is funny because that's why most, I shouldn't say most, that's why a lot of people decide to become high performers, especially at a young age, because they're trying to please somebody, themselves, their parents, whatever. And so it's kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah, big time, big time, big time. And I've like to be transparent or empathetic. I've fallen into that trap a million times in my life. I've thought, well, if I just get a girlfriend, or if I just make $100,000 this year, or if I just travel the world, then suddenly I'll be happy. it took me a long time. And I think it takes a lot of people a long time to realize that, like, all that stuff, happiness, confidence, connection, whatever it is you're looking for, it pretty much starts inside you and with the emotional work of figuring out who you are and treating yourself really well and realizing you're worthy of it all.
Where do we start with the emotional work? Because that's kind of vague and also probably really important.
I appreciate you calling me out on that. It's super vague. So for the average person that I work with, the first question I ask almost all of them is, hey, how many hours a night are you sleeping? And these days we wear sleep deprivation as though it's a status symbol.
Yes.
As though, like, if you get by on 4 hours of sleep, you're way more important than everybody else in the world. And that is total bullshit. The first level of emotional work for a lot of people has nothing to do with, like, digging into your childhood or what it may be, but actually taking good care of your physical body, because the relationship between the physical and the emotional is so much more interwoven than we realize. So the bare bones first step, if you are a person that on paper should be loving life, but played out in reality, something's missing or you're quietly depressed or whatever, is like spot check how much care you're taking of yourself. Aim for 8, 9, 10 hours of sleep a night. Eat more fruits and vegetables, drink more water, and hang out with your friends. And then the real emotional work, once you've got the basic stuff down, tends to, I think the first step I take with most people is asking them what their inner monologue sounds like. I'm sure, Jordan, you're aware of this, but some people listening might not even be aware that they have an inner voice. So the first step is to be quiet and just listen as your inner voice starts talking to you. And most people's inner voices, and this is totally true of me before I actually addressed it, most people's inner voices are an asshole. It's your job to hear that and let it speak and see what's true and see what's not true and move forward from there.
Yeah, most people's inner voice, it's like if you treated your friends like you talk, if you talk to your friends like you talk to yourself, you wouldn't have any friends.
Yeah, that's unfortunately really, really well said and really true.
And high performers are probably even more likely to have this, because what the high performer's voice says is, you should be working right now. Look at you sitting on your butt. And then you get out of the shower after a long day and it goes, look, this is what you look like since you don't work out enough. Look at you, you know, you're not taking care of yourself. I mean, people like, I mean, I know this because this is what happens in my own head a lot of the time. And then I have to go, all right, this is supposed to be motivating, but you're not doing it quite right. It's like your nasty grandpa who's like, hey, look at you, you slob, get back to work. And it's like, I appreciate what you're trying to do here, but I'll take it from here. And you have to let your conscious mind kind of take over and go, look, you work out 3-4 times a week, you're eating decently, you're working hard, you know, you don't have to treat yourself that way. And it's tough because it's a conscious process.
Yeah, for sure. And this is where some of the deeper work starts, is like the conscious thinking part of what's going on that can be sort of manipulated. Like we can manipulate what people think through marketing or through comments or through like making really strong appeals to them. And then when you move down to the emotional realm and tease out those two, that's where a lot of the magic starts to happen. But going back real quickly to the inner voice, a lot of high performing people, and actually we don't even need to narrow the spectrum, a lot of people in general spend a huge amount of time comparing themselves to others. And when you do that, almost assuredly, you just notice how the other person is better than you. They're smarter, they're more attractive, they've made more money or whatever. And that, the second you play that game, which to be fair is basically inevitable in a sort of capitalist Western culture, but you start losing because it's just a rigged game that you're going to lose because everybody has stuff that they're better than you at and everybody has stuff that you're worse than you, that they're worse than you at. And the high performer only ever really sees the gap between themselves and everyone else and how much worse they are without realizing what's great about them.
Right, because you're doing this unfair comparison where you're comparing the idealized version of that person with the hypercritical version of yourself.
Yeah, exactly. The entrepreneur that just started his business 3 days ago compares himself to Mark Zuckerberg, forgetting that Zuckerberg is very gifted at the right place at the right time and has also been working on Facebook for what, like 10 or 15 years?
Right.
It's just not, it would make no sense to make that comparison, but we do it to ourselves all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And we continue to do it because we see that as sometimes it is motivating. So you say, well, since this is motivating me to continue, I'm just going to keep doing it. But it has that sort of, it does long-term damage to your psyche.
Yeah, big time. And with motivation, it's like the question I hope people ask themselves is like, am I being pushed towards something or am I being pulled to it? Like if you're being pushed and you're just like beating yourself up and it's a lot of uphill effort, probably you're in the wrong direction. But if you feel pulled and you're being swept away by the flow or the excitement and something that's natural to you, probably then you're on the right path.
Nice. So how do you start to teach this stuff? How do you start to give people practical applications? How can people start to look at this and take action?
Yeah, great question. So for me as a speaker or consultant, the first step is always to form a connection and like be the first, like one of the interesting ways that humans work is if you want someone to open up, you should be the first one to open up. So I tend to, with any client or audience, be the first one to open up. And my personal story around this stuff is I had built in my early 20s a business that by any economic measure was successful. I was flying around the country and at times the world first class. And when I was speaking, hundreds of people are coming to see me talk and all this stuff. And then I got it off stage. I think I got a standing ovation, but I'm not sure. This was in Kansas City. And went back to my hotel room. It was this luxury hotel room. And just broke down sobbing in this luxury hotel room after giving a talk for hundreds of people. Because I had totally neglected myself. The relationships I cared the most about were deteriorating, if they even still existed. My physical health was crap. My mental health was crap. My spiritual life, if that's important to you, was totally non-existent. So the step one is to realize like, hey, we should be having these conversations. I will lean in and meet you there. And like, by no means does anybody have to have this conversation with me, but it's really useful to find somebody else that's willing to open up and connect to that level because it's really, really, really common. So once people are open, the biggest suggestion I would make, you know, like we said, focus on your sleep and all that stuff, diet, social life. But the biggest suggestion I would make is to create time for yourself. We are so good about prioritizing other people and taking every last meeting and pushing ourselves to do whatever. But I urge people to like schedule 3, 4, 5 hours on like a Wednesday night, Sunday morning. It doesn't matter when. And turn off your phone, turn off your computer, and do something that is totally and completely for you. And there's two awesome things about this. One, when you eliminate the distractions, oh, and by the way, like this idea of scheduling time for yourself or taking yourself out on a date, like you have to do it by yourself. You can't bring your significant other or your best friend or whatever. And the reason this is so important and a really good first step is one, by eliminating distractions and quieting your life down with no phone, no computer, no other people, is a lot of the shit in your head or in your heart starts to become more obvious and you can no longer ignore it. And the reason that so many people make themselves super busy, they surround themselves with technology, they always have music or podcasts playing, is because they're afraid to hear who they truly are. They're afraid to see how much pain that they're in. And if you are one of those people and you start to feel the pain, don't run for it. Don't run from it. Everybody in the world wants to run from that pain. I get that. I've been there. But the further you run from it, the more intense it's going to get and the longer you're going to have to deal with it for.
Yeah.
So if it starts to come up when you create space for yourself, lean into that. Sit with that. Let it wreck you for a second and show you who you are, because processing that will be one of the first steps in allowing you to actually become authentically and genuinely happy. And not happy because you just bought a Porsche or a Tesla and you have joy and it's pleasurable. Or I shouldn't say joy, you bought a Tesla, whatever, ate a candy bar and it's pleasure. It's something fleeting. When you process this shit you're holding onto and you start seeing who you truly are, that's when you access like this, I think it's Camus that said, I found within the dark winter an eternal spring or something like that.
Yeah, you're asking the wrong guy.
And when you see yourself for who you are, that's when you get it. And the other thing that happens when you create a couple hours, and I urge people to do this, and this is a mandatory for the people that I work with carefully. I hope people carve out a few hours every week just for themselves. The other thing that's great about that is suddenly you are treating yourself like somebody that you love, somebody that's worth respect, somebody that's worth connecting to and deserving empathy and compassion and all these great human things that we often deprive ourselves with. Because like, if you just imagine for a second, your girlfriend or one of your parents or somebody that you love really dearly, and they're coming to visit you, probably what you would do is schedule a couple hours and figure out something they really enjoy doing. If you want to like show this person how awesome they are and how much you care about them, and then you do it with them. And that's a delightful, charming thing to do with another human, but you should extend that same love and compassion and attention to yourself. And you do that by doing it.
Yeah, that's true. You can't pay lip service to this process, right?
Yeah. And there's a little bit of like psychological sleight of hand that happens with that too. And that is that like, we tend to believe that our feelings inspire our actions. So you wake up in the morning and you feel super motivated. So you go to the gym and you crank out some reps. And that is absolutely one of the ways that human behaviors work. But what we tend to miss is that also our actions can inspire and create our feelings. So like if you wake up in the morning and you're not feeling motivated to go to the gym, but it's important to you, a really nice thing to do is lace up your shoes and make an agreement with yourself and say, look, I'm going to go to the gym. I'm just going to do one lightweight rep. And if I still don't have the motivation to crank it out, I'll release myself. I'll go back home, watch Netflix, eat pizza. But the magic thing is like, because you're already doing the actions, 9 times out of 10, the emotions start to follow. Same exact thing happens with prioritizing yourself. You might think, no, I'm an asshole. I don't have time to do this. I don't deserve to, whatever, poke around a used bookstore for 5 hours or go to a movie by myself. But you force yourself to do it. And suddenly you start, your sense of self-worth starts increasing considerably. And you start feeling a lot better about your work and your life and yourself.
Yeah, see, that's the problem I can totally see happening with this, right? Is you go, oh, well, you know, I don't deserve to do this thing for myself today because look at my inbox, or I don't deserve to do this thing for myself today because I haven't even come close to returning all the phone calls that I've got and those people are counting on me. How can I be so selfish, right? So
yeah.
That it becomes a problem because you start viewing it as selfish instead of like a mandatory, you got to treat it like a business meeting.
Yeah. I wish people would treat it like a business meeting and invest as much in themselves as they do in their business, as they do in like other people's perception of them, as they do in like their partner or their family's happiness. Because if you do invest in yourself like that, everything else around you benefits from it because you're happier, more energetic, more creative, more engaged, and your life just flows better.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it can be really complicated to, or not complicated, it's simple. It seems like it can be difficult though to bring yourself to think about it in that way, because it's actually for you, right? And we're always our own last priority. Not everyone, but many folks, for sure.
Yeah, you're right. And what I tell people is like, look, if your life is going how you want it to, and for a lot of people, their lives are, that's great. I want more people like you. Don't change too much. Like whatever you're doing, you're in your zone, awesome. But if your life isn't going how you want it to, and like you're waking up feeling stressed, or you're not engaged, or you wish you weren't doing what you're doing or where you are, like you need to make a change. I imagine a lot of the people that you work with, Jordan, that are attracted to your stuff are fairly well-educated people. And in the Western world, we value education a ton. And to some degree, we should. But what that implies is that we can think ourselves out of problems, which just, it doesn't work. You need to take action to actually solve a problem. So again, if your life is going how you want it to, perfect. I want more people like you. If not, realize that you're going to have to make a couple changes to get the results you want, and a really nice change to experiment with. And I'm not even saying commit to for a year. Just commit for next week is prioritizing yourself and carving out 5 hours to do something you want to do.
Johnny, we know if you listen to the show, you are driven. In fact, we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast.
Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey.
We have hired a lot of team members over the last 17 years. Going through endless resumes, well, that's a time sink. But you know what else is a time sink? Interviewing endless people, because they're all going to give you the best face forward.
That's why we love Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every single day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets.
Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast.
And listeners of this show get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/charm. Just go to Indeed.com/charm right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/charm. Terms and conditions apply.
Need to hire? You need Indeed. Over the last 17 years, we have launched our fair share of online courses, coaching programs, and finding the right platform has always been a challenge.
They say if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. But if you're an entrepreneur, you know the hard work that comes with it. That's why you need Kajabi. Kajabi makes it easy to run your entire online business from one platform so you can focus on what you love, creating.
Kajabi is the ultimate all-in-one platform that helps creators and entrepreneurs build successful online businesses by unlocking predictable recurring revenue.
No matter your niche, Kajabi makes it easy to turn your skills, passions, and experiences into enriching online courses, exclusive membership sites, subscription podcasts, thriving communities, personalized coaching, and more.
The best part? Kajabi doesn't cut into your revenue because everything is owned and controlled by you. So keep 100% of what you earn.
And with Kajabi, you also get robust analytics, easy payment options, email marketing tools, and customizable website templates, all built in.
You don't even need a huge audience to make sustainable income. There are thousands of creators on Kajabi making six and seven figures with less than 50,000 followers.
Right now, Kajabi is offering a free 30-day trial to start your business if you go to kajabi.com/charm. That's kajabi.com/charm.
Go to kajabi.com/charm and join the creators and entrepreneurs who have made over $7 billion.
Now, back to Jason Connell. How do we even pick what we want to do? I think a lot of us don't even know. We go, oh, okay, I got to do something I want to do. And then they're like, I got to work out because I look like crap. And then they're like, you know what else I want to do? I want to go grocery shopping because the refrigerator's empty. And I really want to cut the lawn or the bushes because those look like crap. I mean, you end up like not really doing what you want to do. You end up running errands.
Yeah, for sure. And like, you have to be mindful about that. And I'm glad that you pointed out. One thing real quickly, you're like, I got to go to the gym. I look like crap. I'm sure you know this, but it's a worthwhile reminder for myself. One of the most attractive features in a person is their vivacity and the light flowing through them and their passion and engagement. So like a lot of times, if the choice is between like, do something that's going to light you up and make you feel electric or go to the gym and your goal is to draw other people to you, actually do that first thing that lights you up and makes you feel like filled with electricity. But my friend Charlie Hone has a really great trick for figuring out like what it is you love to do if you've become so disconnected. What he recommends people do, and I love this, I've got a massive benefit from it, is think back to what you loved doing as a kid and then do something like that or do the same thing now. So like this is a different story, but I'm on a huge North American road trip right now. And I spent a lot of time with one of my childhood friends, a guy named Mike. And Mike and his brother had literally 40 plus Nerf guns when we were kids.
Oh, wow.
And like the best thing in the world was to get all our guy friends over to Mike's house and just have huge Nerf battles. So what Charlie would suggest, and I think this is brilliant, is think back to what you loved as a kid and then either give that same thing to yourself now, like go buy a Nerf gun, which I have back at my place, or do something similar, like go to a paintball thing or go to a laser tag thing.
That's pretty crazy. You know what? Can I tell you? I just did paintball recently. Don't do paintball if you haven't done it. I have bruises everywhere and I got shot in the head. And I'll tell you, on my scalp, it's so painful that I saw stars, quite literally like those flashes of lightning. And I've separated my shoulder before. I've had like dislocated thumbs. You know, I've gotten punched out before. This was by far the most painful thing I've ever experienced. I've had nails go through my foot. Getting shot in the head with a paintball was excruciating. It was absolutely terrible. Anyway, side note, but I'm still dealing with it. I still can't even touch part of my hair. Because when I touch my hair that's growing into that spot, I just feel like this shooting pain. It's really nasty. And like, if it weren't healing, I'd be at the doctor.
It's, wow,
yeah.
Brutal.
So to stay away from paintball, but laser tag sounds safe. Yeah.
Okay, go with laser tag in that case.
Yes. But, you know, it pays to go the sort of juvenile fun route, going back to what you're saying, because the things that are designed for kids are actually designed to be safe. They're designed for minimal thinking. They're designed to be really, really easy. So something like that's really fun because if, say you go cycling, right? That's good for you. It's fun. It's something I find relaxing, but you've got to plan ahead. You've got to make sure your bike's in good condition. You've got to go out there. Weather conditions play a role. You've got to make sure you can get back to where you're going. You got to navigate. That might be fun. It might be something for you. But when you really, really, really want to unplug, you've got to do something that's so autopilot that you could screw up everything and not get injured, hurt, or lost. And so I think laser tag and things like that are a really good outlet for it because you reconnect with your childhood and also you can't screw it up. You can't get injured.
Yeah,
and you
yeah.
can't fall.
Another good one that like reminds me a lot of childhood is improv classes, which has tons of great side effects for people that want to like both improve their happiness and improve their social skills.
But largely, and especially at the beginning levels of improv, like, it's just playing games. It's like recess for adults. It's really phenomenal.
That seems like you could be nervous doing that, though. It seems like that might be a little bit of a stretch for a lot of people. I always recommend improv, though, because I think it does get you outside your comfort zone in a fun way. But I think for some people who aren't professional speakers and performers, it might be a little bit like, whoa, go up there and be jokey in front of people. I've never done that before.
Yeah, for sure. And like for the pure concept of like a date with yourself, get better at treating yourself like somebody who's awesome and deserves love and compassion and all the great things in the world. If improv is going to make you nervous, don't do improv. If you like the idea, then like go to a comedy show or something like that. But this is not the time or the exercise to leave your comfort zone.
Perfect. Well, how did you come up with all this stuff as well? I mean, what was the thing that prompted you to do it? Were you just like one day, hey man, self-love and stuff. That's my thing. I mean,
no.
Obviously you hit the wall somewhere, I'm imagining.
Yeah, sure. It's a little bit of a dark story and a very personal one, but one that I've become comfortable discussing. About 2.5 years ago. So here are the things that were true 2.5 years ago. I was dating this phenomenal woman named Emily. I was living with one of my best friends in the world, a guy named Will, and another guy, a friend who was knew well and was very close to, named Rob, was alive. And then over the course of 3 weeks that just seemed like a total haze, all of that changed. Will and I had been living together. He was a very close college friend, and I moved to Washington, D.C. because I wanted to spend more time with him. And we were sharing an apartment for 3 or 4 years, and he was moving out. He was moving out of our apartment to move in with his girlfriend. And a month or two later, I was going to move out of my apartment to move in with my girlfriend, or move out of the apartment Will and I shared to move in with my girlfriend. And I remember packing the U-Haul van with Will, and it was our guy friends, and I had to duck into the bathroom because I was like choking back tears, and I didn't want to cry in front of my guy friend. I was just really sad to see Will leave. And it was no big deal because I was really excited that Emily and I were going to be living together. And I was flying out of Washington, D.C. to go to Maine, where I had a speaking tour. And I remember getting ready to go on the plane. Emily called me and said, you know, I just got this job offer. It's this, like, my dream job, but it's in Alaska and I really want to take it. And I was at a point in my life where I wanted to pull the people that I love in closer to me. Emily was at a point in her life where what she needed to do was invest in her career. And that was totally the right decision for her. But our relationship wasn't able to take that intense distance because that was also one of the places in the world where I couldn't run my business from. I couldn't really be a very effective speaker because of how the airports are, mm-hmm. and I couldn't get to my clients. So then Emily and I decided to break up, and it was a loving, good breakup as far as those things go. Remarkably painful, but done for the right reasons. And, all of those things, you know, that those are two shitty events all at once, but things that I might have been equipped to handle. And then just shortly thereafter, after Em and I broke up, one of my friends, this guy named Rob, died. He's 28 years old and his heart just sort of stopped. And this spun me out big time. I've never been a big drinker, and I was just drinking myself to sleep. I was waking up, had not even enthusiasm for life, just like no desire whatsoever to be a human. And at the same time, as my personal life was kind of collapsing, my professional life was just lighting up to the point where like I'm getting requests from around the world to speak on leadership and how people can. At the time, I was talking, the phrase I used was, escape the matrix, how you can sort of free your mind from the influence of society and marketing and be more of who you truly are. So my personal life's collapsing, my professional life is flourishing, and I feel like I'm in the middle of the storm and it's all just terrible. And I literally woke up one day and realized like, oh shit, the problem I'm having is that my confidence is shot. Like people don't know who I am professionally. They just see this version of me on stage. And then also my personal life has collapsed and I can't move through the world anymore unless it's just to work. And I spent a lot of time trying to understand where authentic confidence came from. Not the fake it till you make it thing, which is popular and mm-hmm. for some people works, but the sense of waking up and being like, I can do what I want to do. I can leave my comfort zone. And the desires and wishes that I have are things that I can fulfill, even though it might take work. And what I learned through, to some degree, reading, to some degree, interviewing experts, but to a large degree, like, experimenting and living and seeing how things went for me, was that the real root of confidence is self-love and self-compassion. And then as I'm on this speaking tour, trying to fix my personal life, I realize I'm not offering myself any self-love or self-compassion in my professional life. And we talk about like work-life balance, and we talk about the divide between our personal lives and our professional lives, but that's not real. Like, you're still the same human when you wake up and you're playing with your kid or talking to your girlfriend as you are when you're, you know, in your cubicle or on a sales call or whatever it is you do professionally. It's not like you blink twice and you're a different human at work, and you blink two more times and you go back home. You're still the same human. So it was this weird confluence of like almost unmanageable professional success happening at the same time as almost unmanageable personal difficulty or personal pain and depression that sort of woke me up. It's like, you know, what's missing from my life is self-love and self-compassion. And because I have, you know, I'm very blessed to have access to really high performing people by my line of work. I've worked with everybody from members of President Obama's cabinet through, the other day I gave a lecture in a sixth grade classroom. I noticed that what was true for me was also true for a lot of other people, and that they were neglecting themselves. So this is a long, long answer of how I came to what I'm speaking on and what I'm consulting on now.
Yeah. Wow. And you've always been kind of a speaker and a performer, actually. I mean, is it true that you're like one of those child entertainers?
Do you have the package?
I have the package.
Okay. This delights me. Yes. I didn't talk about this very much until the past like year and a half, when a friend sort of helped me realize I should talk about it and that it's a real part of my narrative. I was a child entertainer, a professional magician. When I was 9, I was paid to perform at my neighbor's birthday party for like $10. I was very, very fortunate in that I had an excellent mentor who came from the entertainment management world. He managed a handful of just remarkably successful performers. And he mentored me totally for free. And by the time I was 18, I was doing as many as 6 shows a week, oftentimes for hundreds and hundreds of people. My clients included professional sports teams and Fortune 500s. So yes, I've sort of grown up on the stage.
I'm imagining you're like on the Denver Broncos and they're like, hey, we're going to have entertainment at the party. And they're like, yeah. And this like 11-year-old kid walks on stage and is like, here's the dove. And the dove is gone. And you're like, they're like, that's not what I had in mind.
So that your read on that, Jordan, is 100% accurate. So when you're like a 14-year-old child performer, there's not a lot of circumstances where you're going to get harassed by the audience or heckled by the audience, because, you know, they're going to give you a lot of leeway. You're a kid. But there's this one professional sports team, and I'll say that it was a hockey team, and I was performing for them on a school night. So I literally had to go to high school the next day.
You're like, guys, calm down. Everybody take their seats. I have math really early tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just the act before me was this comedian who, when I was like 14 or 15 and all of this happened, like, it was just like the dirtiest, most ribald stuff I had ever heard. And then all of a sudden, there's just like this awkward 14-year-old in a white, crappy white tuxedo looking back that I thought was pretty awesome, doing like weird magic tricks for these athletes and their girlfriends and their families. And it just did not go well. And it was one of the 2 times in my career where I got heckled, and looking back, rightfully so, because I wasn't a good match for them.
Yeah. Who booked that? I mean, that's like, that's such a ridiculous idea somehow. It's like Pauly Shore goes on and then like Jason Connell's going to perform Acts of Illusion or like whatever.
That's basically it. Like weird rope tricks that no, like if you actually had magic powers, no magician would actually do. So that was a really weird experience.
That's so bizarre. Yeah. When I saw that, I was like, that's not real, but you've got something that we're going to do right now.
Yeah. So to set this up, I have mailed something to Jordan. I actually mailed to him a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do my best to perform a trick for you, Jordan, and the listeners over the airwaves. And what we'll need to do, Jordan, is like, you and I will need to sync up. We're going to start slowly, and I'm going to walk you through the instructions just to make sure that the lines of communication are clear. And then on your end, since you are the one having the direct experience, what I would love it is if you were just like, and you're good at this in general, but just describing what's happening, so that the audience knows that this is like an authentic thing that's happening in this moment as we're talking together.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you have a package that I sent you a couple weeks ago. Go ahead and open that up.
Okay.
And I think inside, if I remember correctly, you'll probably find another envelope, but go ahead and let me know what you find.
Yes, it says, do not open until instructed, XO Jason. And I took a picture of it next to my microphone with the recording sign in the background just to extra prove that it's real. And we can put it in the show notes. We might even be able to make it the show art. So
cool.
All right.
That'd be great.
So let's hang on a second. There we go. Opening. Oh, there's a lot of staples in this thing. Hang on a second. Okay, there is a deck of cards in here.
Okay, perfect. So what I'd like you to do is remove the deck from the box
and then just put it on the table in front of you.
Okay.
And let me know once you've done that.
There's a bunch of cards facing all different directions. It doesn't matter, right?
Or... Oh, are these like jokers and advertisement cards?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Just get rid of those. We don't need those.
Okay.
So what you should be looking at, is it a red deck or a blue deck?
It's a blue deck.
Okay, cool. So you should just be looking at the blue backs of the cards. Is that right?
Yeah. So the cards are out of the box as instructed. It's down on the table.
Okay.
Now what?
Perfect. Jordan, what I'd like you, I said this before, but what's important is that you and I sort of communicate clearly in a way that you understand. So if you have questions or if something is ambiguous at all, please let me know because it's important for us to sync up. What I'd like you to start by doing is basically like taking about half of the cards off of the top of the deck, moving it over to the right, and then putting the bottom half on top of the half,
okay,
like cutting the deck.
So take the top half of the cards, put them over to the right, cutting the deck, and then what? Stack them again?
Yep. And then the part that's on the left, just put that on top now.
Okay.
So you effectively cut the deck like
cut
in a poker game.
Cut the deck.
Cool. And what I'd like you to do, and don't even necessarily tell me how many times you've done that, but just cut the deck again, like move a chunk from the top over to the right, move the bottom pack back on top. It can be, you know, one card, it can be 37 cards, whatever. Just cut the deck a few times and tell me once you're done.
Okay, so I'm just kind of cutting the deck over and over and over.
Yeah, exactly.
And over and over. Okay, I've cut it like 6 times or 5 times or something. We're good.
Okay, cool. And to be completely transparent, I'm not 100% sure this is going to work because it's not it's not like a surefire thing.
Might
but what I'd
work.
Like you to do now is, so the deck is like complete in front of you, right?
Yes.
Okay, so from the top, what I'd like you to do is deal 3 cards, the first card to the left, the second card to the middle, the third card to the right, all face down, and tell me once you've done that.
Done. Dealt 3 cards out in front of me.
Good. So we're going to focus our attention on those 3 cards. And I want to just quickly demonstrate how difficult it is to do what it is that I'm about to attempt to do or we're going to do together.
Okay.
Place your finger on the middle card and picture, tell me if you think it's a club or a spade or a heart or a diamond.
I think it's a diamond.
Okay. You think it's a diamond?
Yes.
Do you think it's a face card or a number card?
Oh, I don't know. Let's go with face card.
Okay, cool. And do you think it's the jack, queen, or king of diamonds?
I think it might be the jack of diamonds.
Okay, turn over that card and tell me how you did.
I did terribly.
What was it?
It's the ace of clubs.
It's the ace of clubs. Okay, so we've established the sort of difficulty of what we're trying to do. And by the way, don't worry about that. That happens to me all the time. It is way harder to predict a card than anybody would ever imagine. So you're looking now at the ace of clubs and 2 face-down cards. Is that right?
Right.
Okay, cool. Put your hand on or turn over one of the cards.
Okay. Wow.
And I want you to start off by focusing on the color. And I'm sensing that this is a black card. Is that right?
It is not a black card.
Okay. It is a red card. All right.
Yes.
So let me try again. I'm sensing that this is a diamond. Is that right?
It is
okay,
a diamond.
And I'm sensing that it is a number card.
It is a number card.
And I think the card that you're looking at, if you could just focus carefully on the number, is I believe it's the 8. Of diamonds?
It is the 8 of diamonds.
Yes.
That's pretty impressive.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
Okay, so now what I'd like you to do is you should be looking at 2 face-up cards and 1 face-down card.
Right.
Put your hand on the face-down card, but don't actually turn it over.
Okay.
And what I want you to do is just like feel the connection. This is going to sound a little strange, but feel the connection between your hand and the card. And what I'm sensing... This is really tough, but what I'm sensing is that it's a black card, that it's a club, that you're looking at the 9 of clubs. Go ahead and turn that over and tell me how I did.
You think it's the 9 of clubs? All right.
Yeah.
It is the 9 of clubs.
Yes. Awesome. Jordan, you are a very, very, very talented clairvoyant. Excellent job communicating that information to me.
Not bad, man. And I didn't think you were going to get it, but you nailed that last one.
Okay, good. I'm really glad to hear that. Think about, you know, the art of charm. When I was a child entertainer, when I was a magician, I would always, after shows, get these weird guys coming up to me and being like, teach me how to pick up women. And I was like, do you mean how to do sleight of hand? And they're like, no, like you can use magic to get girls. And I always thought that was the strangest thing because like magic not once in my life got me a date or a kiss or any real like romantic interest from girls.
Right. You're like, dude, first of all, there's jail time involved in asking a 14-year-old kid to help you try to pick up chicks. Additionally... I'm 15. What do you think I know about picking up women?
Yeah, especially that you, like, 25-year-old dude don't know. Like, this, it was really a strange thing.
Yeah.
And that was, like, that was like my introduction to this idea of like picking up women.
They're like, oh, women have to be picked up. Usually I just do magic tricks at their birthday parties and it's all downhill from there.
Yeah. And that was basically my experience through high school. Guys that go that route, I feel like, is so off the scent because they're worried about impressing people when all you really need to do is form a human connection.
Yeah.
And you can like feel if it's reciprocal. Like when you learn to like feel this human connection is like this mutual thing, I'm attracted to her or him, and she or he is attracted to me. Like it takes so much of the pressure and quote unquote game away. And then you just sort of need the audacity to, I don't know, make a move.
Lennon and McCartney, Jagger and Richards, Watson and Crick, AJ and Johnny. What about the perfect duo when it comes to growing your business? Well, that's you and Shopify.
That's right, Johnny. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling your own fire merch or promoting your productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
What I love about Shopify is no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, as well as millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries.
Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. And AJ, you don't have to just sell your stuff anymore. With Shopify Collective, you can curate products to sell from the brands that you love, giving your customers more variety and your business more sales.
Shopify is your no-excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/charm. Go to shopify.com/charm now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/charm.
All right, back to the show. Now, you started off the beaten path, right? I mean, being a child magician doing shows for Fortune 500s and the friggin' Oakland Raiders or whatever. I mean, you've got a history that says, all right, I'm not going to be a normal standard guy who grows up, goes to college, gets a regular 9-to-5. So it seems a little bit easy for you to say, to be like, leave the beaten path. And it's like, dude, you don't even know where that path is anymore. You diverged when you were 9. That was like second grade. So how do we do that if we're sitting here going, yeah, easy for you to say, I've been in this 9-to-5 for 4 years.
Yeah. So great question. So the first step always is to like check in with yourself, be honest with yourself. I have a lot of friends that have mortgages and 9-to-5s and like Roth IRAs and stuff like that, that are like on the beaten path and they love it. By no means do I believe everybody needs to leave the beaten path. Now that said, when you look at where the beaten path leads us, if you just sort of assume that the average American is on the beaten path, it leads you to being fairly overweight. It leads you to watching tons and tons and tons of television every single day. And it leads you to dying with, in many, many cases, a decent amount of debt. So if you are the type of person that kind of, you check in with yourself. And what I mean by that is like, in many cases, literally asking yourself, and what I encourage people to do is like pen and paper, write down the question, how am I? Am I happy? Do I enjoy my life? And then honestly answer that. And if you check in with yourself and you realize that, you know what, things aren't going how I want them to go, it's really flashy. Like a lot of speakers say like, and make a change overnight, like whatever, quit your job and say F you to your boss and fly off to Bali. And that's ridiculous. Like that's such a bold task that nobody's ever going to do it. The real way that people change is slowly and incrementally. So if you feel called off the beaten path, or if you feel as though what you're doing right now doesn't work for you, My suggestion is to figure out something that might be really, really exciting for you and then slowly work towards it. So I meet a lot of people who want to start their businesses and be entrepreneurs. And the cultural narrative that we have around that is like what I just said. You say F you to your boss, and then you like go in a garage and you build the next great tech company. And maybe one out of a million people succeeds at doing that. A much better path is to like slowly decide, you know what, I think I might want to try working for myself. And then you move that forward just a little bit each day, so or each week. So week one, maybe you find an entrepreneur that started a business related to one that you want to do, and you ask her to get a cup of coffee and you pick her brain. Week two is you figure out how much money you're actually going to need to have saved up so that you can invest in your business and yourself and leave your job. And you start sort of slowly saving that money up. The real change is in baby steps. And you're right to observe that it's been a while since I've been firmly planted on the beaten path. And believe me, there are times when I really, really want to be, because people that are listening that have left the beaten path know that along with that comes a very real sense of isolation at times, almost crippling.
Yeah.
That doesn't change the reality that the way you leave the beaten path, the way you are true to yourself, is just sort of incremental baby steps. I mean, that's exactly how I do it to this day.
Yeah, a lot of people who do sort of bounce off the beaten path, to use the cliche, we kind of, and I say we because obviously I'm not really a 9-to-5er myself, it's really easy to blur reality and talk about how cool it is. And, you know, I try to do kind of a counterpoint to that in a lot of ways, where I'm like, hey, by the way, remember those, I used to call them post office days, where I'd wake up in the morning and want to get a job at the post office because being an entrepreneur sucked so bad. My stress level was so high. My hair was falling out and I hated my whole life ever, like everything in my life. I mean, and it was just terrible. And I was super depressed. And that was during AOC. Like, this is during like some of the times when I was running this business. Now I love it, but it's really easy to forget all of the constant rejection and all the neat, like the way you have to dig deep and motivate yourself, because you don't want to remember that stuff because it's painful. So when you talk to other people about it, you're like, yeah, being an entrepreneur rules. And then you see this other camp of entrepreneurs and businessmen whose job it is to sell you the dream. Like, oh, just buy my course and you'll eliminate all that pain. So they're minimizing it too, except when it makes sense for them to market. Like, are you in debt? Do you find it hard to build your fan base? Buy this product I have. So it's very difficult to get accurate reflections on this stuff. And it's really hard to have a frank conversation because it's rarely discussed.
Yeah. And I love you so much for having just shared that with me and with the people listening. Everybody that I know that has gone on to like successfully build a business or leave the beaten path or like find the courage to be true to who they are has dealt with a certain amount of struggle around that. And you have to really feel that what you're doing is so true to you that you're willing to make that sacrifice, because it's going to be crappy. I mean, I had many, many, many days where I couldn't even afford to like get a beer or a coffee with my friends. And I would just lie and be like, oh no, I'm busy. Because I didn't want to say that I was that poor and that strung out and that like that's struggling. So what happens is exactly what you said. People compare. So, you know, a young podcaster is going to look at you and they'll say, wow, Jordan's got a huge fan base. He is very influential. He's fairly famous for what he does. I want to be like that. And you just gave those people such a gift because you said, look, I struggled to get here. There was days when I wanted to work at the post office. And these people that are aspiring to be a man like you, when they're struggling, they'll feel less alone. And I'm so glad that you shared that, because it's such a true narrative of many, many, many people's story. And it's just the one that they don't share, which is criminal.
Well, thank you for that. But I share it all the time here. People are probably sick of it, but I appreciate you saying that. You've actually got a really good resource here about forming a deeper connection with yourself. I think it might be good to wrap with that. I mean, you've got a really interesting exercise, which is interview yourself. And you've even got some questions. We'll make it like a link or a download or something available to people. We'll link that up in the show notes. You've got a list of questions. How do we interview ourselves? Why do we do this? Why is it important? I think this is a great place to wrap.
Yeah, I would love to close on that note. So let's start with why that's important, and then we'll talk about the process of actually doing it. The reason it's important to interview yourself or form a real deep, authentic connection with yourself is because most people go through life without ever truly knowing who they are. And I had a moment where I was on a date with this girl. She's a really sweet girl. I was 22, I was in Montreal. And she had asked me, Jason, what are your three passions in life? And at 22, I just started building my business, Ignited Leadership. And without hesitating, I was like, oh, Ignited Leadership. And then she's like, oh, what are your other two? And I couldn't think of them. Like, I had become so wildly disconnected from myself that I couldn't name my three passions, the three things I love the most in the world. And I've gone on to ask that question to a lot. We're talking thousands of people. And the normal thing is for people to be so disconnected from themselves that they can't name their three passions. And what happens when we're disconnected from ourselves is the world superimposes itself on top of you. Like, politicians tell you what to think, marketers tell you what to buy, your friends tell you what to wear, whatever. And I am a victim of this as well. Unless you create the space in your life to actually connect to yourself, you'll be a victim of that. So, and the other really good reason why people should take the time to connect with themselves is that this is where genuine confidence comes from. Knowing who you truly are is the foundation of authentic confidence that will drive you to sort of get whatever it is you want out of life. And the process that I go through with myself and many, many, many of my clients and audience members, and what I urge the people listening right now to do, is to schedule a couple hours. And I used to say, just do it in one day. Now what I've realized is that if you stretch the process out over a month or two, you're going to get much more out of it. And what I hope people do is literally put in their calendar, like Sunday mornings. And this is a process I go through with myself once or twice a year. And I schedule Sunday mornings from about 9 to noon as just pure Jason reflection interview time. And again, like taking yourself on a date, the goal is to be totally present with yourself. So no phone, no computer, no friends. Go to a coffee shop or a lake or wherever you can focus easily and ask yourself big, bold, open-ended questions. And I'll give you a few examples in a second, and we can link to more in the show notes. But the real trick to answering these questions is to write down the answers, like pen and paper. That does two things. One, when you look at brain activity, one of the highest instances of electrical activity in the brain when you're fully engaged is when you are writing, especially physically writing. And two, the other thing is it forces you to crystallize your thoughts, because oftentimes our thoughts are sort of like this gaseous thing and we're not totally aware of their contents. When you force them into words, that creates something clear.
Yeah.
So what I want people to do, schedule that time, ask themselves big open-ended questions. And here's two really, really, really nice ones. One is, if I was going to die 3 months from now, what would I do? How would my life be different? And this question is going to give you access to a lot of what's actually important to you. The other question that I think everybody should spend time thinking about is, you know, if I had $1 billion or $100 million, just effectively infinite money, what would I do? And suddenly what happens when you ask yourself these two questions, and if you can find the crosshairs, is you find a lot of truth and you find a lot of energy. And I'm going to send you a PDF that you can share with your, with the listeners with more questions. But as you're asking yourself these questions, there's a couple of things to tune into. One is, sometimes when you're answering questions, you're going to feel super energetic and super alive. And that's you. Like, that is your truth. And what happens to many, many, many people I see, and these are the people, by the way, that go on to like watch 4 hours of TV a night and drink way too much, and they sort of die way before they die while they're alive, is they feel, every now and then, they feel that sensation of being alive and they get really excited, that electricity courses through their body. But then their head kicks in and lists a million reasons why they can't do that. So maybe what's true to you is that you are somebody that has been working in finance for a while, but you want to be a poet, and you uncover this or you learn this about yourself. And when you think about being a poet, you get electrified and you get excited. The way that you will get messed up is by your brain saying, no, you're a finance guy. If you become a poet, there's no way you'll be able to make a living. You don't have enough talent. Ignore that. That's bullshit, and it's mostly rooted in fiction. So when you feel that sense of excitement, chase that down the rabbit hole. That's going to give you huge insight to who you truly are. And the other thing revolves around vulnerability and confidence. And we tend to think of confidence as being the situation of being bulletproof. And it's just not. Like, genuine confidence is the ability to stretch yourself and to leave your comfort zone. And the way that I think of it is, genuine confidence is the ability to let your passion and excitement overwhelm your fear and anxiety. Confidence is the ability to let your excitement overwhelm your fear. And doing that requires vulnerability. So when you are asking yourself these broad, open-ended questions, another question that I think everybody should ask themselves is, what lies am I telling myself? What lies am I telling other people? To answer that honestly requires a huge amount of vulnerability. And I encourage people to lean into that. You don't have to be honest with the world around you, though I hope you are. Life goes better when you do. But you've got to start by being honest with yourself. And that comes with being okay, being a little bit vulnerable. In that space where you're interviewing yourself, that's a great space to do it because it's going to give you the foundations of authentic confidence and connect you deeply to who you are.
Great. Thank you so much, man. This has been really informative and kind of, well, really fun, especially the trick. I didn't see that coming. I think it's a cool, like, change of pace for the show. We've never done a trick on the show live, that's for sure. And I can't believe it worked, frankly. It's cool.
Thanks. I'm honored to have been the first.
Yes, you're welcome. And thank you for your time, man. We'll have your stuff linked in the show notes. We'll have a list of questions for you to interview yourself in the show notes as well. Thanks so much, Jason. Much appreciated.
Been a total honor, Jordan. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Interesting show. Producer Jason Connell did a pretty good job. What do you think?
I thought he knocked it out of the park.
You know, it's funny because I love the process of interviewing yourself. And that was definitely one of the highlights from this episode. But I will say the other highlight was doing a magic trick live on the show and then having it kind of not. I really thought it was just not going to work. And then it did.
That was pretty badass, I got to say.
I got to hand it to him. I mean, it takes a lot of balls to do a magic trick. You know, now I'm starting to think, like, I feel like maybe we've been tricked. So
We've been duped.
I've been tricked. I don't know. Love that show. Love that guy. Show feedback and guest suggestions. The show's a Fanarchy. It's run by you. We rely on you to help keep our finger on the pulse. So if you know someone is a good fit for the show, let us know. guests@theartofcharm.com. And if you enjoyed this one, don't forget to thank Jason on Twitter. We'll have that linked in the show notes as well as the other resources, including the questions that you can use to interview yourself. And you can tap our album art in most mobile podcast players to see the show notes right on your phone or your device. I also post a lot of stuff on Twitter that never makes it to the show. I'm @TheArtOfCharm on Twitter. Bootcamp details, bootcamp.theartofcharm.com. Remember, we're sold out months in advance. Plan ahead. Get in touch now. Subscribe in iTunes and write us a review. We will love you forever. And it helps us stand out in the ranks so other people can find the show and the credible advice that they need. It's also the best way to support the show other than purchasing products and training from us. Special thanks to all of the Jasons involved in this episode of The Art of Charm. Go ahead and tell your friends, because the greatest compliment you can give us is a referral to someone else, either in person or shared on the web. Now have a great week and leave everything and everyone better than you found them.
Thanks for listening to The Art of Charm. Get more confidence, relationship skills, life hacks, and everything for the extraordinary man at theartofcharmpodcast.com.